to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday evening, May 29th, as we head into our second hour of tonight's live broadcast from our flagship studio, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. We're going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations, of course, of the Liberty News Radio Network, online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and at libertynewsradio.com. If you missed tonight's first hour, I want to remind you that that hour, as well as every hour of every show we have done dating back 5-6 years, are available to you on demand at thepoliticalcesspool.org. In tonight's first hour, Keith Alexander and I discussed Elena Kagan's judicial hero, hypocrisy of leftist attack organizations, and the political correctness that is forcing a veteran teacher with an unblemished record into the unemployment line. Those issues and more were analyzed by Keith and I during that first hour. Tonight, during the second hour, the hour we find ourselves in now, Dr. Virginia Abernathy will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, I want to welcome back my co-host Winston Smith, is going to help me make sense of a couple of topics before we welcome Dr. Abernathy back to the program. Winston, how are you?
I'm doing very well, James. How are you these days?
It's always good to talk to you. So if I'm talking to you, I must be doing good. I'll tell you, between you and Keith and Eddie and Bill Rowland, we have got one heck of a staff here. In fact, all of the co-hosts will be on hand tonight except for Bill, who has the night off. But, Winston, I'm looking forward to making a little magic with you this hour. Let's see what we can do.
How can we go wrong?
I don't know. Well, you know, the topics that we've got to discuss are sometimes very wrong, but we try to make them right. But I don't know how you can make this one right. We found a GOP candidate that Barney Frank can get behind. And I don't know if there's a pun in there or not, but down in Florida, several Republicans, and we, of course, blogged about this on our website if you want to read along or follow the links for more information at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Listen to this one. Several Republicans down in Florida are hoping to win their party's primary and challenge far-left liberal representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz for Congress in November. One of them is Donna Milo, who takes a strong stand on gun rights, abortion, taxes, immigration, Obamacare, etc. In other words, all of the hot-button issues that appeal to Tea Party types. Will the Tea Partiers rally around Donna Milo? That seems unlikely, and for a couple of reasons. For one, South Florida is not exactly Tea Party country, as you might have guessed, with a congressman named Wasserman Schultz representing the district. Two independents are also running in November. One is named Blumenthal, and the other is named Kunst. And Kunst says his two main issues are gay rights and Israel. The head of the local GOP club quoted in the article is named Jeff Rubinoff. Like I said, not exactly Tea Party country. And no matter how much Donna Milo panders to Jews with her idiotic, insane blather about Israel being our staunchest ally and sharing our Judeo-Christian values, Jews are never going to support right-wingers like Milo. So, massive Tea Party support for candidate Donna Milo seems very unlikely down there as she runs for Congress in South Florida. Simply because there just aren't that many Tea Partiers to be found down in the Miami area. And the few Tea Partiers who do live down there probably aren't too impressed by the fact that Donna Milo used to be Ed Milo. Yes, we have actually found in the political cesspool a conservative transvestite running for Congress who, now get this, this is where, again, the plot thickens. This conservative transvestite is running for Congress by making traditional morality a big part of his or her platform. After all, as Donna's daughter tells us, it's all about family values. And the story reads that at age 19, Ed Milo married his high school sweetheart. They had two children, Michael and Emily. Donna is very blessed because she has a supportive family, Emily said. I call her dad. She's my dad. I have a mom, but Donna is my dad. Well, now, Winston, I could be wrong, and Tea Partiers could begin rallying around Donna Milo's candidacy. After all, they already have Uncle Tom fever. Tr- Tranny Fever could be the next logical step. But just when you think after 6 years of broadcasting and about 1,000 shows under our belt, we've covered it all, we amaze even ourselves. Winston, did you read that story?
I did, James, and I looked at it with a mixture of disgust and amusement. I fear for the Tea Party movement, as do most of us, because we know that it's under attack by people who dislike it, but they firmly believe in the Saul Alinsky type of method of controlling the opposition by leading the opposition. We know that the ADL is frantically trying to get some instigators entrenched within the Tea Party movement. But we also know the Tea Party is frantically searching for a black candidate that they can rally behind so that they can lose the racist label. And this might be just the candidate they need to claim to be hip, to claim to be cool, to claim to be more diverse than they otherwise would be with just your average, everyday black candidate.
Well, yeah, now you can't claim that they're homophobic, whatever that means. I mean, it has nothing to do with being scared of homosexuals. It has everything to do with wanting to keep that kind of perversity away from your family, as far as I'm concerned. But nevertheless, I mean, well, this is the modern-day GOP, I mean, at least on a federal level. Now, I don't want to be too schizophrenic and be hypocritical. I couldn't be as hypocritical as the ADL if I tried. If you listen to the first hour, you know what I'm referring to. But, I mean, on a federal or a national level, I think Donna Milo just fits into the big tent Republican philosophy. However, on an individual state level, there is still some redeeming qualities, as Arizona has proven, and I'm glad to be proven wrong on that. It might still be a pulse of conservative instincts in some of these individual states. But on a federal level, sure, why not Donna Milo or Ed Milo or whatever his or her name is? I mean, this is the new inclusive GOP headed by the token Michael Steele. I'm surprised they haven't poured in a few million dollars into his or her campaign chest down there.
Well, James, as you pointed out, this is Barney Frank's dream candidate. I don't see how Barney Frank could not support this this deviant. I just hope that the Tea Party comes to its senses and handles this the way it should be handled, which should be, you know, distancing itself from this type of candidate. We just don't need this kind of attention. We don't need this kind of distraction.
Well, no, of course not. And I guess, you know, obviously this person is going to lose. But at the same time, I mean, we've covered a lot of news, God knows, on this show. I don't know, truly don't know, if there's ever been a story like that covered on the political cesspool. So even still, after all this time, we can still find fresh plows, fresh fields to plow, I should say, and that's a story you got to read. When I saw that story, I just started cracking up. I mean, I couldn't help but laugh. I had to put it up. I had to put it up on the blog. And so we did. So check it out. Now, speaking of Republicans, and the governor of Massachusetts is not a Republican, but he does think that Republican opposition to Obama's policies borders on sedition, quote unquote. That's what the black governor of Massachusetts, Deval Patrick, said, that Republican opposition to Obama's policies borders on sedition. And what does sedition mean? It means the literal dictionary definition of sedition reads incitement of resistance to or insurrection against lawful authority, as in, you know, overthrowing the government. That's sedition. It is sedition, according to the governor of Massachusetts, to oppose Barack Obama on anything. And, of course, it would be seditious for Republicans to oppose anything that a black president does. They're white, and that means they're pure evil. And you can say whatever you want about them. So now, that's a new one, though, Winston. I mean, we've always been told that it's racist to be a conservative. Now, it's terrorism to be a conservative? That's what the black governor of Massachusetts said. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. I can hardly hear you, brother. What I found interesting about that story was that Negro governor, he equates, well, first of all, I'll go back to the definition of sedition, and it refers to an attempt to overthrow the government. And this Negro governor has equated Barack Obama with the government. He says that opposing Barack Obama is bordering on sedition. My friend, with Barack Obama is not...
Heard R, that means we've got to take a break, and we will be back, though, with more right after this. Sorry to cut you off.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please understand me, baby.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, before that last commercial break snuck up on us, we were talking about the fact that the governor of an American state has said on the record that opposing Barack Obama's policy, any policy that is supported by Barack Obama, is sedition. And sedition is, of course, very close to terrorism. So we know that you are an evil, hate-filled racist if you are a conservative. But now, Winston, they are trying to move the line in the sand up a little bit further and call you not only a racist, but a terrorist to oppose the policies of someone like Obama. And you had a great comparison to draw there.
In Nazi Germany, James, it got to the point to where Adolf Hitler and the government of Germany were one and the same. And that is what Deval Patrick has done with that statement. He has equated Barack Obama with the government of the United States. You don't like Barack Obama? Well, you're trying to overthrow the government of the United States. My friends, they are not the same. The president of the United States, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's anybody, is not the government of the United States. This looks like some posturing in anticipation of taking on the Arizona immigration law, because Barack Obama is against the Arizona immigration law, even though it's a reflection of the U.S. immigration law. But still, what Deval Patrick is trying to do is to equate Barack Obama as the incarnation of the U.S. government, and to oppose him is tantamount to opposing the U.S. government, which really is us. The government is us, James.
It is the people.
It's not Barack Obama.
The framers of the Constitution intended it to be. Probably hasn't been that way since at least 1861, but that's another issue altogether. But, you know, again, we're talking about some things we've never heard before, some issues that we've never quite addressed on this program because we just haven't run into them before. Conservative transvestites, one thing, that's a little comical. I guess it's comical. I mean, it's pretty sick, but it's certainly not as serious as, you know, this isn't some, I mean, I guess he is a blowhard, but, I mean, he's a blowhard with some credentials. This is an American governor, and saying that it is sedition to oppose the government. And when he says, well, oppose Barack Obama, who, as you said, Winston, they're trying to liken to opposing the government, overthrowing the government. This is dangerous, and I tell you, you know, it could catch on. If we can be denounced as all of these unapplicable things because we don't apologize, we don't acquiesce for having some very devout Christian and paleo-conservative viewpoints on this program, and we have to suffer all of this name-calling, you know, what is it to them to add one more to the list? You're all of that, and by the way, you're a terrorist. You know, terrorism is something punishable, and we need to make sure that things like this are swiftly refuted. But, Winston, you brought up another subject in that, in passing, you mentioned the illegal immigration debate and how, of course, Barack Obama would be against what's going on in Arizona because what Arizona is doing is trying to put America first for a change. So why wouldn't Obama be against that? Well, we're going to be talking about illegal immigration for the rest of this hour. In fact, coming up here in just a few minutes, at the top of the next segment, we will be joined by Dr. Virginia Abernathy, the professor emeritus of psychiatry at the Vanderbilt University, which is one probably the most prestigious university here in Tennessee, one of the most prestigious in the South and indeed the country. She's going to be with us to talk about her signature issue, which has always been immigration. We haven't had Virginia on. She's been traveling quite a bit. We haven't had the opportunity to have her on since Arizona became a precedent-setting trailblazer on this issue, and now 17 states have followed their lead or in position to follow their lead. We're going to be talking to Virginia about that, but first, I want to share with you a story, and a story like this isn't very uncommon. It's a drunk illegal alien slams into a car going 60 miles an hour, but in this case, the whose car he slammed into was a state legislator. And, of course, the illegal alien, first of all, had no driver's license. His blood alcohol content was 0.025, which is three times the legal limit for anybody keeping track at home. And when the cops told him that he was in big trouble, he laughed and said, quote, and I'm quoting the story here that we have reflected in our blog entry at thepoliticalcesspool.org, the illegal alien said, "I'm going back to my country, man. Nothing's going to happen to me." Well, here's the story. A serious car crash involving a local lawmaker and a suspected illegal immigrant, the story reads, is threatening to reignite already heated debates about immigration on Beacon Hill. This was a situation, as we stay in Massachusetts, that occurred near Boston. State Representative Mike Moron, or is it Moron, of Brighton was rear-ended by a suspected illegal immigrant this week, the story says. It says he was wearing a Mexican costume, whatever that means, when he slammed into a Moron going 60 miles an hour. And I call him Moron because this guy, Mike Moron, had been one of the leading legislators in Massachusetts that was for amnesty, for denouncing Arizona, for this, that, and the other. So I kind of got his comeuppance, wouldn't you say, Winston? One of these poor, you know, we're a nation of immigrants, illegal aliens, slams into his car going 60 miles an hour and just laughs it off, you know. So that's the story, another story, right there out of Massachusetts. It's been a rough week up there in Massachusetts.
It has been. This guy, he's a recipient of what we call poetic justice, James. And you're right, if you look back over this guy's record, he adores illegal immigrants. He takes every opportunity to support them and aid and abet them in their criminal activities. And now he is a victim of the very people he has been trying to help. That's the story of America in the 20th century. We have become victims of the very people we have tried to help. And you know, that man who ran into that legislator, he is a prime example of someone who has used American virtue against Americans. He's here illegally in the first place, and then second, he commits another crime by driving while extremely intoxicated, and yet he knows that he's pretty much untouchable. He's going to get treated with kid gloves. He's going to be sent back to Mexico, maybe. I kind of doubt it. But in any case, in just a matter of weeks, he'll be right back where he is. He'll be doing the same thing. He'll be driving drunk. He'll be committing more crimes. And he'll be looking forward to the day when he can laugh at how stupid we Americans are for allowing him in our country illegally to carry on his criminal activities. And that's what galls me most about this immigration problem, James, is that Americans have become stupid about it. Except in Arizona and the 12 other states that are going to try to emulate Arizona, we have let people in who hate us, and they are taking advantage of our virtue to destroy us. They are using our Constitution as a suicide note. We have been very stupid about it, and now that we're wising up, we're being called racist, we're being called Nazis, even though the ADL has said it's wrong to do so. We're being called a filthy name in the book. We are being opposed at every quarter. You know, James, the Chinese have that famous curse, may you live in interesting times, And it's getting very interesting in America, thanks to people like this legislator who was a victim of his own charity.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned that the illegal alien might be deported. No such luck in Massachusetts. He might voluntarily go back to Mexico to evade the punishment for rear-ending this guy going 60 while drunk. But thanks to the governor there, the state police aren't able to notify immigration authorities that this fellow might
Don't
be illegal.
Away.
That's another thing that's involved.
Guys.
We'll be back with more right after this, Dr. Virginia Abernathy. Stay tuned.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting here doing it all in the studio tonight. I'm hosting the show, typing a little bit on the computer, reviewing my notes, looking at Winston, and getting ready to introduce our next guest, which happens to be our first guest of the evening, a good friend of ours, a fine lady who has been appearing with us on this show for years and years and years, dating back to 2004 when this whole thing got started. Dr. Virginia Abernathy is professor emeritus of psychiatry at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville and is joining us once again this evening as we continue our discussion of America First immigration reform. Dr. Abernathy, great to have you back on the show, particularly under such uplifting circumstances as we find manifesting themselves in Arizona.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
I hear you clear. How about us on your end?
Yes.
All right. Well, Dr. Abernathy, you know, we've had you on the show, I don't know, a couple of dozen times probably over the course of the last half decade, and your signature issue has always been America First immigration reform. And we've had some highs, we've had some lows, but overall, it seems as though we have always been fighting a retreating battle on the matter. We considered it a victory if we defeated amnesty, but it seems as though we were never really making significant strides. And then, out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere, Arizona comes up and absolutely body slams the pro-illegal alien forces, and in doing so, in passing that wonderful law that needs no reintroduction, everybody knows what's happening in Arizona, and passing that wonderful precedent-setting law, 17 states, at last count, according to Alipac and William Gein, are now on board to try to replicate similar measures. In your experience, Virginia, is this a very high point? Is this the point where it could all turn around in our favor? Is this that big of a deal, or am I making too much of it?
No, I think you're right, James. It's a huge deal. Of course, I won't be happy until we look at all of immigration. We have to look at mass immigration, which includes the legal number, which is incredible. It's between 1.5 and 2 million a year, and these are taking all legal immigrants are also taking enormous numbers of jobs from Americans, and they encourage their friends and relatives to come illegally, and they provide a climate in which they can adjust and begin to take jobs from Americans, so that I don't think you can really solve the illegal alien problem until you drastically reduce legal immigration. Now, that's not to take away from this tremendous breakthrough in Arizona, which is finally states deciding that they need to do what the federal government has simply turned its back on doing.
I'm going to turn it over to Winston after I ask you one more question. You have been absolutely in the middle of this thing, is serving as a leader advocating for such measures for years. Did you have any anticipation in advance that this something of this magnitude was forthcoming? And do you think that this is the victory we've been waiting for, in so much as this is something that the proponents of illegal immigration, the Obama administration, the country club Republicans even, this is something that they can't overcome. Do you think we've got them on the run for one?
I think we might have them on the run, but let's look at the situation. Americans were not getting very concerned about this so long as everyone was fat and happy. I have known for a long time that it was going to take a recession or depression, some kind of economic upset, for Americans to realize and start to look seriously at the fact that illegal aliens and legal immigrants, also called aliens, are taking American jobs. Granted, a lot of American jobs have also gone overseas, but there are lots of jobs that don't move, like construction, like many, many services. Those jobs don't move, but they're being taken from us in this country by people coming into the country. Ridiculous, ridiculous. These are American jobs.
Winston, I know you've been eagerly anticipating Dr. Abernathy, and I know you have quite a few comments on this issue.
Thank you, James. Dr. Abernathy, it's always my pleasure to get to talk with you for a number of reasons, but not the least of which is that you were my first interview on the Political Cesspool when I came on as a co-host, and it's always been a pleasure since then to talk with you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk with you.
I'd like to ask you about the reaction of our enemies, the enemies of America, the enemies of our people. We know that what is going on in Arizona and in these 17 other states introducing similar laws to combat illegal immigration, we know that this is kind of a high point. How do you expect our enemies to react now that you know, well over half of the American people support these laws, and more states are jumping at the bit, or chomping at the bit, to enact such laws? We've already seen a little bit of what they have planned, such as these boycotts, which look a lot like some kind of separation to me. But it seems that they are getting especially nasty. How bad do you think it's going to get in this battle?
I think that they lose ground every time they try to get nasty, because it reveals them for what they really are and what they really want, which is to separate the United States from its traditional roots and make the United States into a third world country, which really resembles Mexico or Guatemala more than what we made ourselves with the direction of the founding fathers. So that I really think that as they get nastier, they're going to reveal their own nastiness.
I think it may be possible that they may start carrying out some of the same tactics that they carry out in Mexico when they confront political opponents with whom they disagree vehemently. I think it's going to get violent.
Well, let's be explicit about what they do. They behead people. They torture them. They kidnap them. Yes, Mexico is a very, very lawless and dangerous place. And to the extent that we let that happen here, we are in serious trouble. Of course, we know it's already happening across the border, and that's one reason Arizona has finally acted to protect itself.
Mm-hmm. What I find interesting about these boycotts is that these boycotts against Arizona is that the people who oppose the law, they are demanding a separation. It's almost as if that the course of human events has shown that there is a need to dissolve some political bands that have connected one people with another. I'm sure you see where I'm going with this, but it just seems like there is a clear movement towards some kind of separation, and that's what these boycotts are. They are attempts to separate one people from another. And that sounds a lot like some kind of secession. What do you think of that?
You mean to say that California wants to secede from Arizona?
It seems that they want Arizona to secede. It looks like California and these other states are saying, you are not part of us anymore. And Arizona seems to be saying, we agree. We don't agree on this issue. We have an irreconcilable difference here.
Well, yes, I have seen cartoons about Mexicans deciding they're going to boycott Arizona, and the punchline of the cartoon is mission accomplished.
Exactly.
Well, California depends on Arizona for about 20% of its electric power, and
that
might bring home that point. But I don't think seriously that California is going to. I don't think the secession is going to come over this issue. I think secession of a great many states is a real possibility, but the states are very united over this, which is that people want America for Americans, the United States for Americans, and I don't think secession will come over this. Perhaps the government will react hysterically. When I say the government, I mean the central government. The federales will react hysterically, but I hardly think so. I think if enough states unite on this issue, that they will individually, separately, take steps to limit and stop illegal aliens from entering their states and staying there. I don't think the federal government has what it takes to overcome that. I don't think that the federal government can also overcome individual states.
Dr. Abernathy, I ask you to hold it right there. We've got to take a commercial break, but we're going to be back.
Okay.
Plenty more with Dr. Abernathy right after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, we've got one more segment with Dr. Virginia Abernathy before this hour comes to a close. Don't forget, though, in our third hour, I'll be joined by yet another co-host, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and also Tom Ball, the author of Starving the Monkeys and the columnist here for Liberty News Radio. We're going to be talking about homeschooling, so all that and more coming up in the third hour. But I am particularly delighted to have Dr. Abernathy with us. I have been wanting to have Dr. Abernathy on the show ever since Arizona made their slam dunk out there with SB 1070. She's been traveling a little bit, but better late than never to be sure. And Winston, I know you wanted to follow up a line of thinking that you and Virginia were following before the last break.
Thank you, James. Dr. Abernathy, I didn't mean to imply that there would be any sort of secessionist movement because of this issue, but I think what this issue has done, it has brought to the surface and set in very high relief that there is a difference between not just thinking, but there is a difference in people in certain sections of this country. And it seems like the gulf between those people is vast and practically unbridgeable. And it seems that these states that want to boycott Arizona, they are saying, we want nothing to do with you as long as you are enacting these kinds of laws. We are incompatible. So that's the point I was trying to make, and if you would comment on that, I'd appreciate it. But one thing I'd like to ask you to comment on is an idea that I have. Since Los Angeles is so, since the City Council of Los Angeles is so interested in the welfare of illegal immigrants, I think Arizona could start providing free transportation to illegals to Los Angeles. What do you think of that?
I think that's exactly what they deserve. But and it might be better than sending them back to Mexico, in fact. However, I think that we have to look at economic realities, which is that the benefits and welfare programs and social safety net that we've relied on for years and years is going to disappear very soon. And I don't know if I'm talking 2 years or 5 years, but I know it's crashing, because the whole United States is operating on borrowed money right now. We're not producing what we consume, and that can't go on for a nation indefinitely any more than it can go on for a family. So I think a lot is going to change. As it changes, people are going to draw more and more to people who are like themselves. And there are people in California who do not like the takeover by illegal aliens or those who are not loyal to the United States and do not wish to speak English. And I think we have to be ready to make common cause with people wherever they are, including in California. And I think that they want to have common cause with us. Right now, they are not being heard. The mayor of Los Angeles, Villagarriosa, is much more vocal and being heard. But let's not forget, there's some Californians out there, including, I might add, Hispanics, who are five- and six-generation Hispanic families, who are very much with us and who want freedom, who want liberty, who want self-determination and self-reliance, just as most Americans, I think, still do.
Well, Virginia, let me ask you this. Normally, when you have
a conservative
issue...
Can you speak a little bit louder, please? I hope I'm not shouting.
No, not at all, not at all. When you normally have a conservative issue that brings together a certain number of states, it's normally the southern states that rally together on any given issue, maybe a few western and midwestern states, and that, as Keith Alexander calls it, is the difference between red state and blue state America. You got red state America, which includes the heartland and the south, and then blue state America are the both coasts, pretty much, the upper northeast and the left coast. Now, but on this, what I've been surprised about this is that Arizona comes out, and they're the only state. And everybody, well, not everybody, of course, most everybody supports what Arizona's doing, both in that state and nationwide. That's something that should be made clear. But the establishment, the media, starts to dogpile on Arizona. But then you have five states that are poised to follow suit, then 12. Now 17 states are in position to follow Arizona's lead in response to this citizen pressure. And let me read those states to you, because here is something that's very interesting to me. Those states, not counting Arizona, Arkansas, Idaho, Indiana, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Nevada, New Jersey, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Texas, and Utah. And I've even heard there's quite a few rumblings here in Tennessee. If Tennessee plus Arizona plus those 17 states could pass similar measures, you would have nearly half the country. But what's so interesting to me is that you've got states like New Jersey. You've got states like Rhode Island. These are typically not our allies on conservative issues. This is an issue, though, that is bringing a wide variety of states together, and I don't know if I've ever seen that before. What about you?
Well, I think this is interesting, and maybe we're using the wrong word. I like to use the word populist, because I'm very much a supporter of Americans' right to work, of the American middle class, and that is what is at threat from mass immigration. So I don't think that we're right to use the word conservative. We should. It's right on many issues, but not necessarily this one. This is a populist issue. Americans want jobs. They want to be able to save. They want to be able to build institutions like hospitals and schools and then have them to use for their own benefit, not for the benefit of people who immigrate legally or illegally into the country. In other words, the infrastructure that we build is for us. The jobs that we build are for us. That is a populist issue. And I'd like to think of as more, I think of myself as a populist. I'm conservative on many, many things like fiscal policy and the Second Amendment and things like that. But on this issue of immigration, I'm definitely a populist because I want America for Americans. I want the jobs for Americans. I want the schools and the hospitals that we've built for Americans.
And populist is a good word. In fact, it's a word that we've adopted into some of our taglines. And certainly on this issue, I guess there would be some overlap between maybe this is a conservative populist issue. If there is
a lot of overlap.
But your point is duly noted, and it's well noted. But let me ask you this, though, and this, I guess, will have to be our closing question, regrettably. Folks, if you want to follow Dr. Abernathy's work at greater length, we encourage you to go to our website, virginiaabernathy.com, and you can link over to her website from ours this evening, as we have her website featured on our homepage at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But it's going to be harder and harder for the anti-Americans, if you will, to boycott the majority of the country. Do you think that the majority of these states will be able to pass similar measures to that of Arizona? And if they do, will the teeth in these bills be enough to take it from theory to practice? Do you think we will start seeing physical deportations? Because that, and only that, is going to lead to any sort of resolve on this issue.
Oh, well, there are a lot of questions there. First, I want to say you don't have to wait for states. Communities can do this. Prince William County in Virginia passed a law 3 years ago, like the Arizona law, and it is working very, very well. It has cut down on violent crime. It has cut down on demand for English as a second language, and it has cut down vastly on emergency room services in their hospital. So communities can do this. The Constitution gives sheriffs enormous power to implement laws of this nature. So you don't have to wait for states. That's one thing. But I do think the states are going to get together and do this, and I don't think that anything will stand in their way because the vast majority of people are for it. We are just overrun. We want our culture back. We want our country back. We want to think that our saving benefits us, which is as it should be.
And that's what makes it such a populist issue, is that the people are for it. And it's great to know, and it's something that I've always said. I've always maintained that the majority of people fundamentally agree with us on the issues, and it's good to see that coming to fruition on something so vitally important. We've got just a couple of seconds. The last question was one that I actually asked earlier, and I know I asked a bushel of them there. Do you think we'll see deportations, actual deportations?
I'm not sure that deportation is going to do any good because they just turn around and come across the border again the next day. I would like to see people put in prisons and put in prisons for violating the law, which is to be here illegally. And I think we should follow the model of pioneered by Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County, Arizona.
Dr. Abernathy, that's all the time we've got. Thank you for being back with us. And yes, Sheriff Joe, he is a true hero. Thank you for infusing his name.
Thank
you. We'll be back
for
the third hour right after this. Virginia Abernathy, everybody.